This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, and it is all presented by our friends at Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you back in the saddle with me for the next hour on Sirius 162, XM 207, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and available anywhere you get your podcasts each and every week. 32 days ago, my guest on today's program found herself in a very familiar place, the winner's circle. But this time, it was different. This time, it was for her. Up until that point, she had known the feeling of winning races as part of a team, having spent time working with Danny Pish, Dallas Stewart, and D. Wayne Lucas. But on Saturday, March 9th, she would celebrate her first career victory since making the decision to go out on her own last summer. And every trainer will tell you, that is a moment you never forget. Please join me in welcoming trainer Jade Cunningham to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jade, appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Super happy to be here.
Congratulations on that big win. I know you've added another one since that point, but let's start with that one. Let's go back to the beginning here and tell me about being there on March 9th and everything that took place that day.
Absolutely. I was really excited about that horse specifically. He was with Dallas when I worked for Dallas. And then I ended up finding him in a field in Florida and brought him on into my barn. And I own 50% of him. And I was like, oh, this horse has like a lot of potential. I know this horse. It's in there. And we ran him the first time in a 62.5 starter and dead last. And that horse came back to the barn, and I mean angry, wouldn't drink water, wouldn't. And I was like, this horse didn't get a run today. Something's not right. So we put him back in for the starter 30, and I really believed he would show up that day. The horse on our outside, unfortunately, got scratched at the gate, and I was like, okay, we only have to beat three horses, and we hit the board. And at this point, I hadn't even hit the board. So I was just like, all right, I just want to hit the board with him. I want him to have run a good race and show me that he's still the horse I believe that he is. And honestly, when the jockey, when Joe Belmer had him so far back, I thought to myself at the half-mile pole, I was like, maybe this horse isn't what I thought he was. And then I saw Joe ask him at the quarter pole, and he started making a move, and I was like, oh, we're going to hit the board. And honestly, it wasn't until a 16th from the wire that I was like, oh, crap, this horse is going to win. So we were just super, super. And Dallas was there that day as well, which was very exciting. I couldn't have put together a better win myself. So we're just super grateful and blessed. And Joe's a good friend. So it's really cool that he was riding the horse as well. And we really enjoyed it. It was really exciting. I still go back and live on that moment.
Yeah, he wasn't the favorite either. He was 34-1, the longest shot in the race, paid $71.20 for the win. I guess that begs the question, did you bet on him?
I didn't. Every time I've ever bet on one of Dallas's, it has ran poorly. And I try just to not get distracted with that mindset of like, oh, I could make money off this. You know, I really want to be focused on the horse. And so I've kind of told myself I won't bet my own horses. And, I mean, I was pretty convinced that day prior to him breaking out of the gates, I was like, we'll hit the board. Like, this is a nice horse. We'll hit the board. And then, like I said, once he broke out of the gates, I was like, well, maybe we're not going to hit the board. And then lo and behold, we win. But I did not bet him. But a bunch of my friends did. So I was very excited for them. And if you go back and watch the race replay, actually, you can just hear I think mostly just me and the people around me, just, it sounds like the Kentucky Derby, like just full on screaming. You can hear it in the race replay on Equibase. It cracks me up.
Dallas Stewart is one of the great guys in thoroughbred racing. And if I know Dallas well enough, and I think I do, he was probably as happy for you to see you get that victory as he would have been if it was his own horse.
He so was. Dallas, I really appreciate him and his mentorship, but mostly his support. And he wasn't around me when the race ran, but when I went back to get his filly ready, he came in and he just put his arms in the air and he goes, "Praise the Lord." And I was like, "We did it." He was like, "That was fun, huh?" And I was like, "Yes, sir, it was." And he's just been such a support system since then. He calls me like every other day, asks me how many horses I have, how everything's going. He's amazing. I really appreciate him.
I have to go back to something you said at the very beginning when you started telling that story. You said that Spankster was in the barn of Dallas Stewart when you were working with him, and then you found him in a field in Florida. So how does that work? You're just driving around Florida and you happen to see this horse out in the field and say, "Hey, Spankster, come back to me."
No, sir. So when I showed up at Oaklawn, I had two horses in my care. And one of them I was supposed to run in a stakes race, and the horse was supposed to be transferred to the private trainer. So I was looking at having two horses and or one horse. Sorry. I was looking at having one horse after that stakes race. And needless to say, I was a little panicked, and I was like, what am I going to do here? So I just started looking up horses that I had, either horses I had tried to claim in the past and I knew, or horses that I had trained, trained with Dallas or Wayne or whoever. And I looked up Spankster, and I saw that he had ran about 3 months prior, but he just kind of disappeared. And I was like, well, I'll just reach out to the trainer and see what they're doing with him, where he is. You know, maybe he has a small injury. Maybe he's a riding horse now. You never know. So I reached out to the trainer, and on Facebook, actually, that's how I found him. And he said, "I'm not having any luck with this horse. I sent him to the farm. Can't get any run out of him." I was like, okay. And I wasn't able to contact the owner through the trainer, but I ended up honestly just Googling this owner. I found like where he worked and, you know, what Google can do. So I ended up finding the number to Spankster's old owner and reached out to him. And he let me vet him, and he's like, "There's nothing wrong with him. He's fine. We're just over it. Like, we cannot get this horse to run. We're over him." And I was like, okay, well, at this point, I'll take a shot in the dark. Like, I don't think I'm better than you, but I need another horse in my barn, you know? And so I reached out to, there is an owner in Oklahoma, Terry Westmeyer, and he had sent me three Oklahoma bred horses while I worked under Dallas last year. So Dallas trained them, but Dallas gave me the opportunity to kind of manage an owner on my own. And I reached out to Terry Westmeyer, and I was like, "There is this horse. I used to have this horse. The horse was running great numbers. I don't know what's going on with the horse. I would like to see, though, would you be willing to go 50-50 with me on this horse?" And he's like, "Yeah, absolutely. I trust you. You did a great job last year." Complete shot in the dark, right? So we got the horse up here, and I've just kind of messed with him, put him back in Dallas Stewart training program, gave him a little bit of time to get legged back up. He was having a little bit of trouble in breathes. He needed a little more air put in him. So we just took our time. My partner on him is fantastic. Doesn't ever push me with him. So we were really able to take our time. And then, like I said, we ran him in the 62.5, and that was pretty disheartening. I mean, he ran a pretty bad last. But that partner is fantastic. And I was like, "Mr. Terry, I am telling you, this is like, this horse came back angry. This is not my horse. Don't give up on him just yet." And I mean, he still hasn't really, you know, proved himself. We're not trying to act like he's a stakes horse by any means, but he has a lot of desire, and that says a lot for a racehorse. So we're excited to see how he goes up against some of those horses he was in the 62.5. So I guess we'll see this weekend.
How great was it to get that first win under your belt, and that proverbial monkey off your back, if you will?
It was so amazing. I really don't have words for it. Every time anyone asks me, I genuinely do not have words for it. I was getting frustrated, right? I had ran 15 times. Why am I not hitting the board? I'm doing everything the way Dallas Tour does. What is the issue here? And I tell everyone that God just had the perfect horse, perfect rider, perfect owner, perfect everything lined up. And it couldn't have been any better if I planned it myself. So I'm very grateful it was the 16th start and that it was Spangster, because it was just so exciting, and so exciting to be my own horse. And Terry Westmeyer came running down the steps and about knocked me over, hugging me. He was so excited. So it was really cool to share it with him and his wife, Leslie, as well as Robbie Alvarado and Joe Belmer. And it was really awesome.
I often say that whenever a trainer is in a slump, an experienced trainer that's been doing it for a while, all of a sudden they get that first win and they break out of the slump, and then they start getting more and more wins. It's like a hitter in baseball who finds themselves struggling a little bit, and they get that first hit, and then they start flowing. So you come back, about 2 weeks later, and you pick up win number two. Tell me about that day.
Everyone had said the same thing to me. They're like, now that you got the first one out of the way, it'll be easy. And I was like, I don't think so. and a little different with Brom's image. We had ran in for 20 and then put it back in for 12.5, so a little more realistic. But just as exciting, honestly, me nor my team take wins lightly. And we were super excited. And that little horse just pulled away. And it was really cool to watch him do that and have two consecutive wins. I mean, it was really, really awesome. So very grateful.
Such a unique story with Spangster getting him into your barn. How about Brahms' image?
Brahms was just a claim. We claimed him off Bill Martin, Charles Jennings. He's been awesome. He's been one of my main owners. He owns a restaurant here in Hot Springs, Back Porch Grill. And I actually emailed him when I started training and was like, hey, I know you're a owner in Arkansas, and I would like to run horses in Arkansas. I worked for Dallas Stewart. This is my history. This is my experience. Would you be willing to send me a horse? He's like, we'll have a phone call. And so we had a phone call, and he's been letting me claim horses. So Brahms' image was a claim. We claimed him here at Oaklawn, ran him back in a 20, and then ended up putting him in for the 12.5. He was the horse that ran right after Spangster's race, and he almost won that race, but they went very fast on the front end, and he ended up getting caught that day, day Spangster won.
Yep. How many things did you pick up in your time working with Dallas that you're using now as you start training on your own?
I would say at least 95.
Yeah.
I think that's the best, the best thing to do is, which I've been really blessed to work for three really good trainers, and I've been able to take something from every one of them. So Danny and Wayne and Dallas, and kind of combine them. But I do think that there is, there's a little bit of structure that does go into race horses that's very beneficial, especially the training program itself. So I definitely took that from Dallas.
Yeah, I think that Wayne Lucas guy is going to turn out to be okay.
I think he's going to be all right.
He can train a little bit.
A little bit, something like that. He's amazing. He's such a good – he's a coach, like they say. Like, that's truly his gift.
Yeah. Yeah, he certainly is. Jade Cunningham with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Fresh off of her first career victory, she now has a couple wins under her belt, and she's continuing to build this business of her own as she went out on her own last summer in Kentucky. She's training in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and looking to build on that momentum that she started off with early on in her career. Jade, I asked you about some of the things that you picked up on. You said 95% maybe of what you learned from Dallas and from Wayne and Danny Pish. What's different about Jade Cunningham what do you do differently than those other fantastic trainers that you had the chance to be around?
Oh, that's a loaded question, right? I don't want to seem like I think as of right now, I'm a smaller stable.
Yeah.
And I gallop them myself. So that's super beneficial. I can get on them. I feel how they feel every day. If there's any sort of a change whatsoever, I can change their schedule. That's up to me. Like, I can go out on the track and I'm like, oh, this horse, he's a little, you know, he's not happy today. I can just jog him a mile, and I can make that decision split second because I only have a small amount of horses, so I still have that opportunity to do that and to be on their back myself and make that call, you know, split decision. So I think that that's very beneficial, and I really appreciate that I still get to do that. And as of right now, I still get in the stalls myself. I have a really great groom, Jada. She's very helpful and works her butt off. But when need be, I still have the time to get in the stall and go over one's legs and do one's leg. So I'm able to be pretty hands-on right now, and I'm really grateful for that.
Is there, and I've asked other trainers this question before, but I want to get your opinion on it. Is there any type of advantage that a trainer can gain from being on their horses in the morning and really getting to know what's underneath them?
I think it depends on the amount of horses you have. I think that if you're a Dallas Stewart or a Wayne Lucas, you need to be able to watch every horse go. And if you have 30 horses, you can't do that. So it's going to be more beneficial to be on the ground or be on the pony and watching those horses. Because Dallas and Wayne, very, very talented at looking at a horse and picking up on that. I feel like when you're a smaller stable, 5 to 10, you have the opportunity to get on them. And I personally find it beneficial, mainly because I was raised under Danny Pish, who does still get on his own horses. I don't have to trust anyone else's judgment of, you know, maybe it's something as minor as this horse switched into its left lead and he started getting out a little bit. Well, a lot of riders, you know, they're not going to notice that. And so for me, I feel like it's very beneficial. I think as a bigger, like once you get to about 20 horses, it's better to be on the ground and be able to watch all of your horses as opposed to get on 5 and miss 15. Mm-hmm. But as a smaller trainer, I think it's very beneficial because I do have the ability to feel those small things. Or like the other day we claimed a horse, the horse was getting out really bad. And I was like, I can feel the horse's sound. There's something else going on. We found a cut in the horse's mouth. So stuff like that for me, it's very beneficial. But I was raised under Danny Pish, who gets on his own horses and taught me a lot of the feels and the horsemanship from being on top of them. So I think that's partially where my mindset comes from with that.
Are those things that you can, if you do get to a point where you have to be on the ground watching those horses go because you have so many horses, can you find out if a horse has a cut in their mouth or something's a little bit off by having a good relationship with the exercise rider?
Yeah, I definitely think so. So Dallas has done a fantastic job at keeping exercise riders in his barn that have, they've been with them 10, 15 years, and they have that good relationship. And so Emerson's one of his main hands, and Emerson understands what Dallas wants and what Dallas wants to know. And so they communicate really, really well. And Dallas does a great job, too. I've seen him watch a horse slightly get out in the turn, and he's like, hey, check that horse's mouth. Something's not right. So I definitely think, you can do it, you know, either way. I mean, people do it either way all the time, right? Steve Asmussen doesn't gallop his own, and he's very successful. And Wayne doesn't gallop his own, and he's very successful. So I think it just depends where you are in your career, but I think that you can be just as effective either way.
What's the goal? How many horses would you eventually like to have in your stable?
20 to 30. I don't ever want to be where I can't be hands-on on the ground. Or if someone can't get along with the horse, I want to have the opportunity to get on their back myself and see if I can figure it out. So I think I really enjoyed when I left Dallas, he had 26, I believe, or 30. And I felt like that was very manageable. And I thought that was a really good number. So that is the end goal.
You mentioned Danny Pish too. And we're going to talk more about your time with Danny and then with Wayne and Dallas as we move throughout the program. But take me back. Let's start at the beginning here, Jay, because we really haven't done that yet. How did you first fall in love with horses and with horse racing?
Well, Danny, I hated horse racing when we started it in my family.
Really?
My family is, yes, hated it. My family is a NASCAR family. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, originally. My uncle drove NASCAR trucks, Craftsman trucks. My dad raced cars. My uncle raced, or my granddad raced cars. Like, that's what we did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And my sister wanted to be a jockey, so we started going up to the Thoroughbred Center in Kentucky, just trying to get her some connections. And my mom ended up meeting my now stepdad, R.D. Williams. And I was 12. I despised the track, had never moved in my life, did not enjoy moving around, did not enjoy horses, didn't care for any of it, honestly.
NASCAR or auto racing?
I hadn't really been around it much. I believe that if we would have stayed in Tennessee, I think that I would drive something. My cousins drive a little bit in the smaller leagues. I don't 100% understand it now that we've left, to be honest. But I definitely think my granddad would have got me into it. I definitely have a little bit of a need for speed. So I definitely believe I would have gotten into it. But like I said, we did leave when I was about 11.
Okay.
So it wasn't until I was 17 that I actually started to fall in love with the horses. I was hot walking for Danny Pish, and his assistant at the time was Jasmine Daniels. And she's like, Danny, this girl's got talent. I don't know why she thought that, but she did. She's like, you need to let her, like, let's let her start backtracking horses. And my stepdad had legged me up on one of my mom's horses. He's like, oh, it's easy. Like, you know how to ride a pony horse. You can ride this horse. And I don't advise this. Let me start that way. It's best to start at a farm. Very dangerous to start galloping on the racetrack. But Danny started putting me on horses to backtrack every day. And that's really how I learned to gallop. And I loved. I loved feeling like I was helping the horse. I felt like I was actually benefiting the horse. Danny is he has instructions from the moment you hit the track to the moment you get back in the stall. He wants, if your horse is acting a certain way, he wants to know why. If the horse isn't walking, he wants you to figure out a way to get it to walk. Danny is very horsemanship, like so much horsemanship from their back. And he believes that how they act and their respect for you plays out in how they run in a race. And so I learned so much through that. And I fell in love with it when I felt like I was benefiting the horse and I was actually doing something to grow in racing, as opposed to, you know, just hot walking, or which those are all important things as well. But really being able to feel like I had almost a say in what the horse's day looked like. That's when I really fell in love with it. And then at 19, Danny called me and said, hey, I don't have anyone to run Lone Star Park. He had 50 head there. And he said, do you want to come be the assistant? Which I tell him all the time how crazy it was to ask a 19-year-old to run a shed row who had no clue what they were doing.
Right.
But he was there with me and helped me through it. And Danny is really the reason that I am where I am. So very grateful to him.
Did getting on the horses in the morning kind of help fill your need for speed?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely, it did.
Did you ever think of being a jockey?
I did not, no. So I do not like starting gates, and I don't really know why. I do know why, actually, but I do not like the starting gates. And I really like food. So I honestly have always wanted to train because I felt like the trainers had the most impact on the horses, and that's always where my heart's been.
Why don't you like starting gates?
Well, first, I'm claustrophobic, but second, I had a Danny Pish horse that the first time I broke out, I was like, this is great. This is so much fun. And then I started breaking his babies, and I broke out on one, and the horse turned right, not left, right, into the fence. And I was like, oh, I don't like this. And I stayed on, and I took the horse back, and we broke out again. And he broke straight, took me to the inside fence, put me on the inside fence, almost put me over the inside fence, and ran off. And I was like, oh, I hate this. I was like, I don't like this. Because you just have to give them their head as you're coming out of the gates. Like, you got to let them do what they're going to do. You're trying to get them out of the gates. And I just, Wayne got me really good at breaking out of the gates. I am really good at it now, but that has not changed my lack of love for it.
Wow. Danny Pish has saddled more than 2,600 winners. He's had a ton of success. He's won stakes races. He's been at the top of the game. Were there certain horses that you worked with Danny that, for whatever reason, you're always going to remember?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of, like, random ones that I kind of remember. Mm-hmm. I Am Jane Doe will always stand out to me, though. I adored that filly. She won a stakes race against the boys, I believe it was at Sam Houston. But she, I adored that mare. And I don't really remember. I know she was kind of tough, and she really made me feel like I was working for what I was doing. And she was probably, at that point in time, the nicest horse I had ever been on. And so the way she stretched out across the track and her attitude was just really classy. So she will always be one of my favorite horses, honestly. And I also had the opportunity to go when she had a colt that ended up running at Sam Houston. I can't recall his name at the moment. But I, for his first start, I made it down to Sam Houston to watch him run. So that was really cool also.
That's fantastic. Jade Cunningham here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. We have just a minute or two left before we have to get to a bottom-of-the-hour commercial break. Jade, you mentioned your sister and her love of horses. She was into it before you?
Yes. So, I mean, we started at the same time, right, because she's 2 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So when she went, I went. She did not end up riding. She didn't really like it either. She did end up ponying. And, now she, just recently she was an assistant for a quarter horse trainer. So, she got into that. So she's all about it. And she loves it as well.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. I love it. That's fantastic. Do you ever see a scenario play out where she starts working with you?
Yes, I absolutely do. I mean, she has a house in Houston, so I'll probably have to convince her a little bit, honestly. But so a couple weeks ago, I went to the Ocala sale, and she's who I called. I said, hey, you got to come run the shed row. So she came and ran the shed row while I was in Ocala. So I would absolutely love that if that ever came about.
Yeah, dynamic duo for sure. And as Jade continues to build her operation, it'd be great to have her sister by her side. Jade, stay with me. We've got to get to a short commercial break here. We're going to continue this conversation. We'll talk more about your time with Dwayne Lucas. We'll talk more about your time with Dallas Stewart as we continue on this edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Nominate now for this year's Fasic Tipton Selected Yearling Sales. The July Sale. A strong market for precocious and athletic yearlings that attract the sport's leading end users. Last year, 40% of yearlings sold brought $100,000 or more. The 103rd Saratoga Sale. The crown jewel of American yearling sales, Saratoga set new sale records for the second year in a row, including the highest price yearling sold in the world in 2023.
Ties upstairs, $4 million even.
New York Bred Yearlings, the number one marketplace for New York breds, held during the Saratoga race meet. Selected sales, superior results. Visit selectedyearlings.fasictipton.com to nominate now and rise above the crowd at our 2024 Selected Yearling Sales.
It's time to get ready for the 2024 Thoroughbred season at Woodbine Racetrack, the number one turf track in North America. Season runs from April to December with over $62 million in purses with an industry-leading stakes program including two Canadian Classics, the Grade 1 Million Dollar Rico Woodbine Mile and the Million Dollar King's Plate. Woodbine offers top safety-rated racing and training services, plus world-class facilities. Make Woodbine your home turf this season. Learn more at woodbine.com.
Perennial leading consigner Eddie Woods once again offers a strong consignment at this year's OBS March 2-Year-Old and Training Sale, March 12th to the 14th. With juveniles by promising freshman sires, Authentic, Complexity, Echo Town, Game Winner, Global Campaign, Higher Power, Improbable, Instagram, McKinsey, and Promises Fulfilled, you'll be sure to find your next winner at the Eddie Woods consignment. Visit eddiewoods.com.
Well, Fasic's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Fasic Tipton has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're going to have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Phasic Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Macron, the gray horse, has the head lead at a party between them. Jackman is trying to keep up with that pair. Spite and Malice, four behind as they swing off the turn. Macron down the lane has a head lead at a party's very stubborn. Jackman inside fighting. He's back in third, though. Furlong to go. Here comes between horses Spankster with an eye-catching move. And Spankster and Joe Belmer going away from the competition. Spankster wins it at 34-1. What a huge upset to kick off the day. Jackman second, Anna Party holds third, Spited Malice was fourth.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on HRRN. Mike Penna with you as always, visiting with trainer Jade Cunningham, the trainer of Spankster. That was her first career victory since going out on her own. It occurred at Oaklawn Park in the first race on March 9th, and as you heard, a big upset at 34-1. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast whenever you have a few minutes. And you can do that, too, on every single podcast platform. So however you get your podcast, tune in to the Horse Racing Radio Network and follow along with Trainer Talk and all of the great shows we bring your way each and every week. Jade, how many times have you gone back and watched the replay of Spankster's victory?
I did not sleep the first two nights, so I would say at least 20. I actually screen recorded it. My sister is in Texas, so she doesn't have access to the race, so I screen recorded it and sent it to her, and then I have just gone back and rewatched it at least 20 times.
Does it ever get old?
No. No, even when you were just playing the announcer over, I was like, I was still getting excited.
Yeah, I can imagine it. I said in the beginning as I was introducing you that it's a moment that most trainers, well, I think every single trainer would tell you they never forget that first win. And whether it's Shug McGahee or Wayne Lucas or whoever it is, you always remember the first winner that you saddled.
Yes, and like I said at the beginning, it wasn't like you went off as a favorite. You know, like Brahms, so grateful for that win, but a little more expected. And Spankster just... I mean, I had agents sass me about the races I was putting this horse in. And I mean, I had a lot go on with this horse. And I was like, I know this horse can do it. So when he did it, it was just, I mean, so much cooler of a first win than I could have ever dreamt up myself.
We spent time in the first half of the program talking about working with Danny Pish and how that all came about. How about Wayne Lucas? How did that relationship come about?
Yeah, I went to college and I quit the racetrack. I was like, you know, I've been here since I was 11. Maybe I just feel like I like it because this is all I know. So I left, went home to Tennessee. It was during COVID. I hated every second of it. I was so ready to get back to the horses. I was like, no, my heart's with the horses. So I had a friend that was working for Brendan Walsh, and she's like, we need a gallopin. You can come up here and you can work with Brendan. And so I was working with Mr. Brendan and everything was going well, but he lost some horses. I was the new man on the totem pole. And he's like, Jade, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to have to let you go. I was like, oh my gosh. So I went to Breeders' Cup that year. This was maybe 4 days later. And Mark Cassie let me walk some hots, and I was just kind of trying to be around it. Cause I was like, what do I do now? Like, go back to Tennessee. Like, I'm not in Texas. Danny Pish isn't here. I mean, I have no connections here in Kentucky. What am I going to do? So I was leaving Breeders' Cup, and something made me duck into a barn, and my friend Jade Louder was there, and I was just telling him, I was like, man, what am I going to do? And he's like, you should talk to Wayne Lucas. And I was like, okay. And he's like, he likes girls. He's willing to coach you. He's willing to teach you. You know, this is who you should talk to. I was like, okay. So he got me set up with the girl that was galloping for him at the time, Danielle Rozier. And I went and met Wayne the next morning. And so Daniel goes in, like, hey, boss, Jade's out here. She'd like to talk to you. And so he walks out and looks me up and down and goes, is this giraffe-looking thing what's supposed to gallop for us? Said, yes, sir, I am. And we actually really hit it off. But I really appreciate Wayne, and I think he's a pretty big fan of me. He's partially the reason Dallas trusted me so much. So I really like Wayne, but man, he will sass you any moment he gets. So, that's always how I remember meeting Wayne. He was like, this girl is too tall. And I was like, that's okay. I'm gonna do it anyway. And we did.
I love it. You know, I remember years ago getting an opportunity to sit down with Wayne on this very same program, Trainer Talk, and it was in his barn at Saratoga, and spent a full hour with him, and you know, it could have been 6 hours easily. But he started telling stories, and just to listen to him talk, all I wanted to do, Jade, was stay out of his way. I just wanted to sit back and listen, because when he starts telling stories, my goodness, they're so good.
Yes, he is very well crafted, like the way he tells stories. And I will just go over to it. So the Beverly Fowler, the stall lady here, put me in the barn right beside him. And I'm convinced I was on purpose. I haven't asked her, but I will just go over sometimes and say good morning and just sit there and listen to him tell stories, because he has so much wisdom. You want to know everything. And second off, he is so well crafted in the way he speaks and tells stories, and he's funny. I really appreciate him. He's awesome.
When you first met him that day, did you know who Dwayne Lucas was and what he's meant to the sport?
Yes, absolutely I did. So like I said, I mean, we grew up around horses, but we started at Turfway, but quickly went to Nebraska. My stepdad got a steward's job in Nebraska. And then we made it to Texas and Oklahoma. But that was it. Like, I mean, Steve Asmussen was around because it's Texas. But, I mean, a big trainer, someone winning the Derby, that was so foreign. And so even when Jade Louder was like, oh, you should go talk to Wayne Lucas, I was like, the Wayne Lucas? Like, and then you walk in his barn and he's got a sign that says how many Preaknesses, how many Derbies, how many Triple Crown total races he's won. It's very intimidating as someone from Nashville, Tennessee, that was just let go of by a big trainer and has no business being in Kentucky. And fortunately, my granddad is also very sassy. So when Wayne said something about my height, it didn't scare me off. But to say I wasn't intimidated talking to him, that would be an understatement. I mean, I was like, what am I doing? I remember calling my mom, and I was like, Mom, I'm starting for Dwayne Lucas tomorrow. And
that
was amazing.
Yeah, it's tremendous. Will you ever, now that you're out on your own and you're kind of navigating these waters, will you ever take time to go to Wayne or to Danny Pish or to Dallas Stewart, any of your mentors? Will you ever go to them and say, hey, do you have a minute? Can I ask you about this or this or this?
I do. I think that it would be absolutely ignorant for me to not. They are more than willing to help me. And all three of them I have gone to. Danny, I've gone with a filly. I was having issues. She was starting to refuse. I was trying to figure out why. I called him for that. Wayne, I go to when I have a question over the condition book. Dallas, I go to when I have a question over owners. And I mean, it all varies, but I mean, I think that God has given me some really amazing mentors, and for me to not use that resource would just be silly. I cannot remember who said it to me one time, but someone said, smart people wear out the people that are willing to help them. And I mean, ask Wayne and Dallas. I mean, ask Wayne and Dallas. I hold true to that. I'm all about using the resources that you were given. And I'm trying to do the same for anyone that I can going forward if I ever, you know, get that opportunity.
What are some of the more difficult lessons that a trainer going out on their own has to learn?
I think just perseverance, honestly, because I have had multiple people. Yeah, I've had great people. I don't want to disregard those people, especially my mentors. But I have also had people that are like, you have no business doing this. Do you know how hard this is? This is hard. And you're a girl on top of that? Man, like, I don't know. Are you sure you know what you're doing? And like I said, like, you know, sometimes you'll enter a horse and someone will laugh at you where you put the horse. And you have to believe in yourself enough to be like, I know this horse well enough that he belongs there. But also if the horse runs bad, not beat yourself up over that and give up on yourself and on your horse and on your team. So I think more than anything when it comes to really anything in life, but this sport specifically for me is perseverance and knowing that. And, you know, the owner that got me started, very much appreciate him, but he did go to a private trainer. So pulled all the horses from me, and that was discouraging at the time that I was at. You know, God had a great plan, and I've had some awesome people step in. But it's just really easy to get discouraged. And I think more than anything, it's fighting the mental battle than anything else.
You mentioned the girl aspect of all of this and being a female in a male-dominated profession. I've had other female trainers come on the program, and I've always said, listen, you know, you're a horse trainer. Whether you're a male, you're a female, it doesn't matter. But is there something that is more challenging or more difficult for a female trying to do this job in horse racing?
You know, I can't really compare it because I haven't been, and I don't say this snarky. I mean this genuine. I can't really compare it because I haven't been a male in the sport. If I'm being honest, I feel like everyone's given me great respect and helped mm-hmm. me, and I personally have not ran into too many challenges. I've been very blessed that way. In the same note, I've had some friends that, you know, have had to deal with some stuff, but I feel like a lot of the things that we deal with aren't always related to our profession, but more just something you're going to deal with on a day-to-day regardless. So for me as a trainer, I really do not feel like it has hindered me at all. And I've been very, very grateful for that. Maybe I'm one of the lucky ones to not to pull away from any struggles anyone else has dealt with. But like I said, very, very blessed, very grateful, and I feel like for me it has not been too much of a hindrance.
What does your family think of you training racehorses for a living?
They're very supportive. My granddad is very business-minded, so every time I would run a race, he'd call and be like, did you win a race yet? And I was like, no, Neil, haven't won a race yet. So 15 races down the line, you know, and then finally the day that horse won, we got back to the barn and I called him and was like, I want a race. But they're all very supportive of everything I do. And my mom trained for a short period of time. So I think she thinks it's cool that I'm kind of doing what she had a passion to do. And my whole family's just pretty supportive regardless of what I do, honestly.
Jade Cunningham here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Jade, you mentioned your brief stint in college at the University of Oklahoma. Is it all about the Sooners for you?
It was when I was there. I don't even have time to watch football now, but I was all about it when I was there. We had some fun football games and stuff.
Would you go to the games?
I would, yes. I had a couple of friends, and we go and hang out, and it was always so cold, though, you know, like I would kind of get into it, but there's nothing like watching the Kentucky Derby, you know, it just didn't even compare to me.
Yeah, what was the first Derby you remember watching?
The first one I honestly, this is going to sound, let me tell you my most memorable one.
There you go.
That's the one. So it was the year that Secret Oath won the Oaks, and to be totally honest with you, I can't. Well, I'm pretty sure it was Medina Spirit, I feel like, but that could be wrong. Me and my friends snuck into the paddock and stood with Lori Lucas while Secret Oath got saddled. And then I am in her win picture. And so that was just really cool to me because me and my family always watched it on the TV. But to be honest with you, when we were watching it, it was such a far away dream that you almost like, put a wall up watching it. I don't know, for me, I did. I was just like, oh, like, that's cool. Look at those people. Like, that's awesome. And so the first time, like, I really was there at the Derby, and I had worked for Wayne Lucas, and I mean, just crazy stuff that you just don't deserve. That's my most memorable one. honestly, was that whole day.
Let's see, Secret Oath won in what, 2022, I guess? So was that the Rich Strike year?
No, because maybe if it is, then I watch. So if it is, then that make no.
2022 was Rich Strike.
Was that her? Okay. I'm not going to sass you, to be honest with you. But if it was the Rich Strike year, it makes it even better, because when Rich Strike won, I was standing in Wayne Lucas's office, and Bass, his assistant, looked at me and said, huh, that horse just won the Derby because we scratched. And I was like, oh, my gosh,
yes.
It did.
Yes, it was Rich Strike. That's right, because he got in at the last minute because Lucas's horse had to pull out. That's right.
Yes. So that's what I remember about that year, too. Like, I was watching it because I couldn't make it back to the front side, and I was standing in the office, and Bass was like, huh, that horse just won the Derby because we scratched. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it did. Like, how crazy.
Wow, just absolutely incredible. I mean, things happen for a reason, I guess, and it was just meant to be for Rich Strike that year. Did you have favorite horses when you were growing in? Well, I won't even say growing up, because you said you weren't really interested in thoroughbred racing until you got a little bit later in life. But did you have horses that kind of drew you in? For me, it was Holy Bull. I became a massive Holy Bull fan, and before that, Strike the Gold and horses like that. So were there horses for you that did the same thing?
No, I'm embarrassed to say absolutely not, honestly. I literally hated racing so much. I mean, almost to a ridiculous amount of, like, resenting it. And then when I did start loving it, I was so focused on the Texas circuit that I never really broadened my horizon. And I wish I would have, honestly. But that is currently something that I am doing, if I'm being really honest and open. It's something I'm still, you know, pedigrees and things of that nature I'm having to really dig into now, because it was so far from my mind prior to wanting to train or stepping out on my own to train or Dallas or Wayne or being around the bigger breeding and horses.
So fascinating. Why do you think, Jade, that you resented and hated the sport so much?
I just, a change, honestly. I that's not really fair, because the sport itself I like. But, you know, I was a young kid, was moved from Tennessee and just wasn't prepared in my mind. And God always has a great plan and has awesome things that he's doing. But at 11, you don't think like that. And so you're just like throwing a fit. And honestly, that's what I did for about 5 or 6 years until Danny really started giving me a chance, and I felt like I was, you know, actually doing something of benefit. But I don't think I ever, I guess, saying I resented the sport wasn't completely fair. All I knew was the sport is what kind of uprooted my life. But the sport itself, I really like it, and I really enjoy it, and I think there's a lot of good in it.
Interesting to hear you talk about, you know, learning some of the pedigrees and all those types of things now, because you are playing a little bit of catch up on that side of things from people that grew up in the game and were surrounded by it from birth. What are some of the biggest things that you think you need to learn going forward as you continue to build your operation?
I mean, literally as a whole pedigree, and I really hate to say that. It's not my ideal thing to say as a trainer, but I've learned a lot already, but you know, learning the studs and what studs produce the best grass horses and what mares produce, you know, what am I looking for in a mare? Confirmation I'm good at. Wayne went over that with me. So I'm still just every day, and I've been really diligent to learn it. So I go up to the races and I'll look at the sires and how this horse is running. Where is this horse running? Where has this horse ran? And for me, that's a good way to learn it. But when I went to the Ocala sale, of course, it was still a little overwhelming. I was like, oh, crap, you know, we gotta keep on this. And you know, when you find a horse that you like, you take it to someone that you trust, like Wayne or Dallas, and ask them their opinion and see what they think of the horse and what they know about the sire is kind of where I'm at right now. But it is definitely something that I'm still growing in. And hoping to, and definitely going to improve on.
Sure. Do you see yourself at one point going to the sales and selecting horses with potential new owners?
I hope so. I think that that's, you know, everyone's goal as a trainer, and that's what I've seen Wayne and Dallas do a lot. And I had the opportunity to go to the Saratoga Sale with Dallas, and that was also very helpful. But, yeah, I absolutely hope to have that opportunity.
Do you have a favorite racetrack that you visited so far?
I really like Santa Anita. I'm not saying I'm trying to go out there and run a whole meet, but I've shipped out there a couple times for Breeders' Cup, and I just think it's so beautiful, and it's a fun atmosphere to me. I really enjoy it. And, you know, we did a meet at Saratoga. It's fun as well. I like it. But my home's Oaklawn, so I always got to give props to Oaklawn.
Yep. Yeah, you can't go wrong with any of those tracks. And I know Santa Anita, for me, is one of the most beautiful racetracks in the world. When you're sitting there in the grandstand watching the races, or you're sitting there at Clocker's Corner in the morning and you're looking at the San Gabriel Mountains and the horses galloping at the base of those mountains, it's majestic.
It always gave me chills. That's honestly, yep. Santa Anita, just to be there for a little while, that's one of my favorites. I really enjoy it.
We kind of glossed over this in the first half of the program. You mentioned your stepfather, R.D. Williams, a jockey who had a lot of success in his career, won 4,254 races, several greatest stakes races as well. Those came before your time because they came in the late 80s and early 90s. But tell me more about R.D. Williams.
Yeah, he like I said, he's one of the ones that got me up on – he put me on one of my mom's horses and encouraged me to start galloping. And he's very supportive of everything I do. So, it's cool to, they started breeding dogs. My mom and him did in Tennessee.
Really?
Before. Yes. So they're no longer on the racetrack. So, our paths, honestly, like on me loving the racetrack and him leaving the racetrack, they kind of, they didn't really go together. But, you know, everybody has so much respect for him, and he's very supportive of me. And, you know, if I have a question about anything, he'll answer it. So I really appreciate that.
What kind of dogs do they breed?
Labradoodles, Labs, and Standard Poodles.
Ooh.
Yes, they went quite opposite. And then Rob keeps a couple horses to break as well. He said just because he gets bored.
I love it. I love it. Fantastic stuff. Jade Cunningham joining me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We talked about her first career win coming on March 9th, and now she's added another one, and she's off and running with her career. Jade, what do you think is the key to being a good horse trainer?
I think detail. I think that's one of the things Wayne taught me, that the small things are the most important things. Did they eat this morning? How do their legs feel? How's their attitude? You know, anyone can get handed a program and say, hey, this is what the horse is going to do 7 days a week, and do it. But if you're not paying attention to those small details, they will sneak up on you, and they will take you down. And so I really just think being detail oriented with your horses and realizing that they're living, breathing things, and that's not a bad thing, but that you can actually use that to your advantage if you'll give them the time that they need.
Do you keep the lines in the shed row raked perfectly the way D'Wayne Lucas does?
So we try real hard. We have not reached D'Wayne Lucas status, but that is – it's really funny you say that, because last week I walked out and my groom had just kind of knocked the shed row down. I was like, hey, you're going to have to do the shed row again. I was like, I'm really sorry, but, like, we can do better. So it definitely is something we're striving for.
Yeah. As a young lady in this game, and I won't give away your age here on national radio, but as a young lady in this sport, have you embraced different technology things, or maybe even social media, in terms of building your operation? Things that, you know, somebody like a D'Wayne Lucas or a Shug McGahee or somebody that's been doing this a long time may not be as inclined to embrace. Have you done any of that?
Yeah, I'm going to be real vulnerable here. So Twitter is super helpful.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, I sent a bunch of emails when I started. But at the beginning of this year, God challenged me to get off of social media except Twitter. And so we're just trying to grow like Wayne Lucas in Dallas right now. And and trust that God's got a plan. And to be honest with you, I went from, like I said, 2 horses to 8 at one point in time. So far, I am not using technology to its full potential, but I do like Twitter, and Robert Yates will write stuff about me, and that's always very helpful. And I try to reach out to people through email and things of that nature. And I definitely try to, like my owners, I really try to keep them in the loop, because that's the whole point of owning horses, is getting to enjoy your horse. So I try to send pictures fairly often, videos, if someone other than myself breezes them, and things of that nature. So I definitely take advantage of technology in that sense of keeping my owners truly connected to their horse.
This has been a really fast-moving hour, Jade. We're down to the final 3 minutes or so, and I always love to end Trainer Talk by asking trainers to let us know something about them that we haven't talked about yet. So maybe other hobbies or interests or things that you enjoy away from racing. What would they be?
I like to shoot my bow and arrow. I'm not great at it anymore. I'm a little out of practice. But that is something. And honestly,
you're speaking my language now. I'm a big bow hunter, so you're speaking my language now. Yes.
Oh, awesome. How fun. Honestly, other than that, I have a church at Oaklawn that I go to, and or in Hot Springs that I go to, and the rest of it is pretty horse oriented.
Do you hunt, or do you just do archery for the fun of it and the competition?
Just the fun of it. And I haven't even made it to a competition. I literally just have a bow that I set up in my backyard and a target. I would like to get a lot better at it. And I wouldn't mind hunting, but I have not actually been able to go hunting in my whole life. I would like to. But no, I just do it for the fun of it. It's kind of something to do and something to practice. And you know, if there's a burglar or something.
let me get my bow. Hold on. Just stand there for about 5 minutes while I get the arrow on the string. And yeah, that works out really well. You're better off with the dog. See if your mom can give you one of the dogs that they breed.
I already took one, so we're good.
How old's the puppy?
She's 4.
Oh, not so much of a puppy anymore.
Nope. She's a chocolate lab. She's fantastic. I take her down to the lake and we go swimming.
Fantastic stuff. Harder to train a puppy or to train a racehorse?
So I got real spoiled, and Mom and Rob had already trained this one. It's one of the ones that they were breeding, but not bred, you know. And I got her when she was 1.5 years, and she was fully trained, and so she's been perfect. I was like, this is great.
Well, Jade, listen, it has been so much fun to catch up with you on this show here today. Really do appreciate you taking the time, and want to wish you all the best going forward. Congrats on those first couple of wins, and let's keep it rolling.
Thanks so much.
That is trainer Jade Cunningham here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion of this show, you missed a lot. It was a fun visit. Head back to the website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast. You can do that, too, on Apple Podcasts or Podbean or Spotify, every podcast platform. Just type in Horse Racing Radio Network and listen to all the programs we bring your way each and every week. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.